Thank you for joining us today to discuss growth and potential in prints and editions. Investing in art, probably the number one key buzz phrase used in 2023. But today we will be stripping it back to prints and editions, a subject we all deeply specialize in terms of expertise and also our technology that we have developed over the last 3 or 4 years. And it's for really good reason within this investment conversation. So today we are lucky enough to be joined by our three specialists to really unpack some of this and give some practical advice around starting out in this field and discussing key trends. So with us today we have Jasper Tordoff, our modern British specialist.
Hi guys.
Rebecca Marsham, our American pop specialist, and Florence Whitaker, our Banksy specialist, all of which have a breadth of experience in dealing in blue chip prints and editions on the secondary market. Thank you guys all for being here.
Thank you.
Yeah, great to be here.
So there are multiple platforms and galleries making the effort to use quantitative techniques of pricing, working with evidence derived from art market data. We are all right to express some skepticism in this area. You know, the stock market, the real estate market have key indicators. You know, they have traded stocks or sold houses. And the challenge with the art market is a majority of data happens away from the public market. It happens in the private marketplace through traders like us and through dealers. So this bias of selection in art data is a real dilemma. It's just simply harder to make those comparisons than it is elsewhere. However, we are in a unique place of opportunity within the prints and multiples marketplace. There are, in their very essence, the nature of prints and multiples offer levels of comparison. So the area that I really want to focus on today is how we can draw those parallels. So without further ado, we've had some really fantastic questions come through from people attending today and who will be getting the recording later, which I'm really pleased with because it means that we've got some really tailored conversations and valuable insights that we'll be able to give this audience. There will also be the opportunity to add in questions as we go, which I will come to as I can. There should be a little box at the bottom that says type and people can add questions as they go. So one of the questions that really stood out to me, which came in last week, was really why prints? And whilst I've already discussed a little bit around how this is uniquely positioned in terms of financial investment, how do prints and editions from iconic artists stand in terms of market demand and value compared to their original works? Rebecca, perhaps this is something we can go to you for first.
Yeah, that's a really, really good question and one we're very passionate about, obviously. I think that, you know, in recent years, the art market, both people who work in the art market and collectors, have really sat up and taken notice of the prints and editions market and recognized actually the importance and the value of these works. You know, these aren't just prints. They are handcrafted. There's a beautiful craft to this process, which is really evident when you have a look at these works in the flesh. And, you know, we see that not everybody can afford to buy an original artwork in these blue chip artist arenas, but there's such a broad range of price points to start off at and, you know, artworks that are lesser known or really iconic that are achievable for the regular collector, you know, that we speak to. That makes it a really valuable area to be looking at.
And how perhaps does the movement of original artworks through the market affect the print market? Because that's quite an interesting relationship, isn't it?
Well, it certainly is. Well, I think that, you know, these original works, they highlight the images that we see in the prints and market, prints and editions. And so it's just broadening the reach. It's creating something that's really recognisable in the prints and editions market.
And you'll often see a swell of attention over the print series when that original goes through sale. So let's talk a little bit more about those primary drivers of growth. Florence, what are the, across the print market, what are those key drivers?
Yeah, I think you've touched upon, both of you have touched upon one of probably the most important, and I think that's also why prints are so important, is that effect that the original market has on, on the print market. I think, you know, there's a couple of instances in really recent memory that I can think of that tapped both sort of American pop, Banksy, and obviously, you know, modern British art. But where we have really strong or record-breaking auction prices for sort of original artworks, we see that kind of trickle down into the print market. So an example of that might be the shot Sage Blue Marilyn, for example, in, I think that was 2022 actually. And we've seen, you know, even since then, a kind of direct correlation of the strength of the Warhol market, kind of, you know, especially in the Marilyn sets or even in the individual Marilyn prints from that series. Might be kind of one case of it. Another one that I think clearly sort of resonates specifically, I guess, in my market would be the Banksy shredding, which I think pretty much everyone can even probably remember where they were when that actually happened. And we can see, again, that kind of trickle effect between the, you know, the auction of that original work, the shredding, obviously then that was in 2018, the kind of resale in 2021. And you can literally see that kind of graph match against the kind of original pricing. So that's definitely one aspect that is a key driver of growth in the print market. I think there are others that kind of nicely tie into that. Obviously, you know, kind of artist hype. And that might be through, again, might be through auction results. But I think the other thing to note might be the, you know, are they included in a biennale if they've got a big show coming up? You know, they've got like a big announcement of a museum exhibition. And that goes for, you know, most blue chip artists, to be honest, we can often see a kind of a growth in that sort of artist, maybe even around a specific series. For example, I guess, again, a recent example might be for the Hockney. You know, we've seen the kind of major exhibition at the Lightrooms and how that feeds back into the kind of iPad drawings. And that is something that, you know, Jasper, I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more about in more detail later, but that we constantly are asked about the iPad series and Yosemite and the arrival of spring. And again, we see a lot of that from the hype of the show. So yeah, I think there's obviously the original market, there's auction results, there's artist hype. And, you know, like a kind of Banksy, there's stunts and things like that that really affect the market.
Also, can I just add on to that? I think that's a really good point that Florence makes about the hype, and specifically going to your market, Florence, in the Banksy market. You know, last year we had that wonderful exhibition up in Glasgow, which was so interesting and different to what he's done before. And every time Banksy does some, you know, event or stunt, suddenly the influx of demand and inquiries increases. Recently the road sign that appeared and then got swiftly stolen and gets so much coverage in the news, and we definitely see that you know, bounce on effect.
I think that's what's really exciting about particularly collecting modern and contemporary works, is because you're seeing a lot of activity, and it's, you know, it's not just art world occurrences, it's also, you know, what the press do. Actually, that's what's quite exciting, which means that really a lot of people that collect deep in this area, there's a real excitement around pop culture, and that's how it, you know, and really, and you know, we're talking about artists that actually started creating their portfolios in the 50s when, you know, pop really became a thing and that cult of celebrity. So just taking a little bit back from, you know, the hype of Banksy, who's, you know, the number one in that space, and, you know, and really the sort of the OG Warhol. Jasper, what key trends in the modern British segment are you seeing at the moment, and perhaps how do they differ in maybe Damien Hirst's market versus Hockney and Riley?
Yeah, it's a good question. Actually, it tails on quite nicely to what we were discussing before about the hype. Because in a way, with Damien Hirst and all the recent releases that he's doing with Henny and the collaborations, that creates a new type of hype. I mean, these print publications are happening quite regularly. And of course, because it's Damien Hirst, he's a great self-publicist. And, you know, he's got so many followers on Instagram, so that everybody knows about these. And in a way, it has positive and negative effects on the market. Perhaps what I'm seeing at my side is that there's a more of an interest in the older works that Hearst has done. There's an argument where the market gets a little bit diluted. There's so much going out there. So there is, you know, there's both positive, great, it's in the press, there's more interest. And again, we see more inquiries come through. But again, there's also an element of the market might look a bit saturated with all of these releases, and they're quite hefty edition numbers as well, which is very different to some of the earlier works. And then if we sort of draw on Bridget Riley, again, her show that she had in the Hayward, which I think was one of the last solo exhibitions of her work, created a huge, huge influx of new collectors coming into the space, people that perhaps didn't already collect artwork. They liked the price point. There was a nice entry point for Riley. And that made a huge impact on sort of her print market, which undoubtedly was enhanced by sort of originals coming to the market as well. But it's interesting that the Hearst take, because obviously he's an artist that is still producing lots and lots of editions. So there's both positive and negative effects of that.
A real showman, like so many of them. One of the questions we had, and I've got to go to you on this, Florence, because it's very much a Banksy question, although, you know, please do all answer it. We've obviously been through an extraordinary situation in the last 5 to 7 years, which is, you know, we look at sort of investment growth. What effect has the pandemic had on the print market,
Florence? Yeah, you're right. There's definitely a specific correlation between between the pandemic and the lockdowns, really, and the print market. I think, I mean, you know, without sounding too much like a broken record, this is something that I definitely discuss with my with a lot of my collectors, which is that during that time, such a funny time that everyone was sort of locked at home. And I think you were looking around your walls and there was a lot of sort of, you know, blank spaces on your walls, and you're potentially thinking about, you know, artwork that could go there. So there was always that side. And then the other side is that the people generally tended to have a bit more cash, really, because they were, you know, you weren't able to go on those holidays that you were thinking of. You weren't able to kind of do, you know, many of the other things that you probably would have done. So a lot of people turn their attention to the art market, both from a kind of aesthetic and an investment perspective. And I think what we saw is a lot of new people and new collectors, which is really exciting, come to the market. I think if we look at Banksy specifically, you know, coupled with kind of what I said earlier, I think we had this sort of melting point of a unique set of circumstances where we had the lockdown. You know, people felt like they had a little bit more disposable income, as well as all like the Banksy stunts, this hype, you know, many kind of original auction, you know, original pieces going through auction. And we just saw the market kind of skyrocket, really. And there was, if I'm completely honest, there was an overinflation of the market. So the prices just went astronomical. Like with anything, you know, you can't kind of keep going at that level. And so what we've seen since things sort of calmed down and things went, you know, quasi back to normal, we've sort of seen a market correction. And so, you know, the price of those have softened. They've had to come down because, you know, the trajectory that we were on was sort of so sort of great. So, you know, that's another thing to bear in mind when you are thinking about when you're thinking about these external factors that drive growth, you know, what does that look like on a long term? And I think it's really interesting because if you look at the pandemic as a small aspect, and we see this across, you know, all the data that you can see on our website, we have lots of sort of points of different auction results, as well as, you know, a lot of data that comes in, private data, lots of different kinds of data points. But you can see this clear correlation. And when it's sort of, you know, when it's sort of dropped down, if you actually take it on aggregate over the last 10 years, the growth has been quite gradual. But if you take it in just a short snap of three, it does seem like it's been very drastic. So again, it is very much how you look at these things and in what perspective and also what context as well.
And that's what's so interesting about perhaps now is a good time to talk about, you know, what we see from just a purely sort of public auction perspective. Mm. So, you know, the auction results are you know, estimated to be about 30% of what's actually happening in the market because of the way things are traded all the time. And I think, you know, to your point, Florence, you made a really good example of it. If you were to look at the Banksy market from that moment when the pandemic hit, and also they were so easy to trade if the, with COAs, there was particularly easy market to move things around in. And then you looked at just the overwhelm of supply when something like that happens, but being able to look at it on a longer view and have all the knowledge that you just gave us, you know, through that, to be able to make these decisions in a better way is really what we're trying to do with the value indicator and my portfolio. Rebecca Warhol, I mean, you know, much, much older marketplace in our very small area that we're discussing today. What, and I feel that this is going to come back to hype again, which is quite interesting. You know, no one can deny that some of the pop artists have hit the high street recently, you know, like many people who didn't know who Keith Haring was, you know, walk into any high street store and you'll see, you know, pieces that are either direct replicas or inspired by. How do you feel the market has changed over the past 3-4 years?
Well, I think this kind of goes back to Florence's point. I've certainly seen a massive difference in spending power and what people are demanding. I was working in gallery during the pandemic and I saw extraordinary sales coming through. We thought it wouldn't be that way, and it was. In gallery, as you point out, there are a lot of artists who are really quite blatantly inspired by these great icons that came before, and that it's an homage, isn't it? It's an homage to these artists, and I think that you know, a lot of them are fabulous, but wow, to have the real thing in your hands. And there's another point that I wanted to make, and I hope this is answering your question, is since then, I think that the pool of collectors has broadened and there are more people looking at investing in artwork, including a bigger number of high net worth individuals, but also really importantly, millennials who are looking to invest in the art market as one of their investment options. In fact, looking at investing generally and choosing the art market as something that's tangible and really exciting and potentially lucrative. Did that answer your question, Charlotte, or did I go off on the tangent?
No, it's absolutely true, and I agree. I think there are particular series that perhaps in, you know, Warhol's almost sort of Nostradamus, you know, a lot of his topics just live on. There are particular series that feel like they're having more of a moment than they've ever had before, aren't there?
Certainly. And you know, we saw 2023 was a really exciting year, watching the auction results coming through, and really from our end, the inquiries that we get, and certainly what we've seen at auction, you know, a lot of people really looking at the sets, which of course, as we move further and further away from the year that they were created and they get sadly broken up, the rarer they're going to be. But, you know, Endangered Species did incredibly well with an achieved price of 2.8 million, including fees. I mean, that was so exciting to watch that. The Marilyns are incredibly sought after. I mean, those are really, really iconic works. The ads. Also, interestingly, we've had a lot of inquiries into the Cowboys and Indians, which is, I think it's a fabulous set and quite difficult to get hold of. And also The Ladies and Gentlemen, which I'm particularly fond of. And, you know, I think it's interesting watching the trends. And I think it goes to, you know, some people are steering still towards those wonderful iconic pieces that we know and love Andy Warhol for, but also looking at these really important works, but they're just lesser known, they're less obvious, but they are absolutely having their moment in the sunshine.
Jasper, going to you, you know, David Hockney, Bridget Riley, these are artists that are still with us. And, you know, I mean, Hockney's a fascinating one. He's still producing, he's still reinventing. That's, you know, talk to us about the trends in the last few years with David Hockney's work.
Yeah, so it is great that they're still with us. And, you know, for an artist like, let's start with David Hockney, whose career has probably been defined by experimenting. You know, he brought the digital iPads to the market. You know, they're probably looking outdated now because of NFTs and they've become a craze. But for an artist of that generation to be producing those works, it's fascinating. And how has the market taken to them? Amazingly well. You know, in terms of what we're seeing huge demand for would be works like the iPad series, you know, work, and then if we're looking at full sets, we're looking at the Yosemite suite that he's done, Arrival of Spring. These are all works that you could have picked up directly from the publishers for, I think, around £40,000. And the market's gone crazy for them. There's been a slight softening in recent results for, you know, works like Arrival of Springs. But it's amazing to see how originally on release, the digital drawings perhaps didn't have such an impact on the market, whereas now that they're some of the most sought after Hockney pieces. And we're really seeing a huge demand. If we look back at Riley's work, it's really interesting again to see the work that she was producing in the 60s. So the fragments, works, the black and white pieces that she was doing, those are in huge demand. And the prices have really sort of reflect that. I mean, that they can get quite expensive. And then if some of her newer stuff, so I believe her last release was in 2019. And again, these have really taken to the market nicely. So it's quite interesting to see, particularly with Riley, the early works in her career, which is perhaps more traditional, that we see those often having the highest results at auction. Whereas with David Hockney, works from 2020, 2019, right at the artist's end of his career, really command the higher prices. It's quite interesting to sort of juxtapose those two artists in that way. To sort of find where the value trends are. It's very interesting to look at.
I do want to, if people have got questions, please do pop them in this. It's the first time we've done a live on a round, and I hope that everyone can see the little type box at the bottom. Please do pop them in there. They are public for everyone to see, just so you're aware. But we'd love questions as we move on from trends into some really practical advice around this area. So let's start with condition, authenticity, and provenance. Absolutely paramount to affecting price and the ability to be able to resell if that's something that you want to do. Who wants to go first with this, the topic of condition, and perhaps what people should consider for the first time entering into the market when it comes to the condition of a print, bearing in mind things are of various ages in this marketplace?
Yeah, I'm happy to kind of go ahead, because I think those three quite tie nicely into, well, across all three sectors, really. But I always say, you know, number one is when you're looking at sort of purchasing an artwork, make sure that, the three things, exactly as you said, Charlotte, is condition, provenance, and authenticity. And I think this is almost more important, of course, for works that are of a certain age. So a lot of the original artworks have been in shows and you can track everything back. When it comes to the screen prints, some of the Warhol pieces are, Rebecca, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think sort of 60-70 years old, some of them. Make sure you're doing your due diligence, and there is really no silly question to ask when you are coming to kind of someone like us. So what we do specifically, and I think not what every gallery or auction house necessarily will even do, is we make sure that we have everything unframed. So that means that we can check the front and the back of the artwork, make sure that you can kind of see what we can see, really. So that just means that, because we've had, unfortunately, some of our clients have too, that horrible thing where you've purchased an artwork, you deframe it and you realize, gosh, the edges are all completely stained or it's been framed really badly in the past. And there's some bad foxing, which is, when you get this horrible little mold spots and things like that. So make sure that you've asked for a condition report, that you're getting the full condition on everything, because that will make a difference to the value of your artwork. Of course, those works that are in better condition will command a higher price. And that's just because aesthetically they're going to look much better. Condition really important. And then of course, provenance and authenticity. Provenance is, for anyone that probably, I'm sure everyone does know, but provenance is basically where has the artwork been before it's come to you. So, you know, has it been in any potentially, you know, big collections? Has it been through private hands? Has it been through auction previously? You know, all those details you should be able to kind of find out. Often this can be either, you know, written as a kind of list, or you might even see, you know, on the deframing of work, stickers on the back that show which gallery the piece might have previously been, you know, sold at, for example. And then the final thing is obviously authenticity. And that, again, is key to the value of your artwork. And, you know, authenticity can come usually often with a certificate, whether that be from a kind of a gallery or an auction house, potentially from an expert, if this is potentially very old print. And then specifically in my case, it would be a pest control certificate of authenticity, and that's Banksy's Right Hand Arm Pest Control, which provides certificates to kind of guarantee an authenticity of the print. Mm-hmm. So that's quite a lot of information, but if anyone wants to have any more questions about pest control certificates, feel free to type a question in the bottom, because I could probably talk about them for hours. I think that's, those three things are really key, because...
I think the other thing that's worth mentioning in this space is that there's obviously a lot of peer-to-peer sales happening, and almost everybody believes that their print is in immaculate condition, don't they, Rebecca?
They certainly do. They certainly do. And I think it's quite key, actually. You know, you've got the Banksy market on one end and you've got the Warhol market on the other. These, as Florence rightly says, these are old pieces of paper that perhaps back in, you know, the 80s would not have been framed to the standard that we would frame them today. And that can have an effect on a print. But, you know, we're very passionate about disclosing everything we possibly can about the artwork. And I think what's really key as well, and what sets the prints and editions, another thing that sets the prints and editions aside from the originals, is when you're buying an original piece of artwork, you really want to see those beautiful brushstrokes. You really want to see that gorgeous oil paint impasto and the nuances that come with an oil painting. But with a print, such as, let's take a Marilyn, which everybody knows that image, once you've seen one and the glory of one, and they're quite magnificent, as we all know, when you see them in the flesh, you've seen it. So actually, you know, the powerful thing when buying a print from, you know, a gallery or online, is those three points that Florence talked about: the condition, understanding the condition report, asking those questions, understanding its history, and of course, knowing that it's authenticated. Those are really powerful.
Yeah. I mean, really, when you're buying a print, you're buying those, you know, you're buying into those three things, aren't you? So it's more than anything, because, as you just said, a piece of art has a history and it will have been through something. You know, otherwise you'd be buying from the primary market. Expect it to have a story behind it. Jasper, in the modern British market, particularly perhaps in the Lowry market, we need to be asking for condition reports. We need to be asking about what we call the paper trail, the provenance of an artwork. Where's it sold? Who's it been owned by? And also bear in mind, you know, we have crazy things like celebrity sales, where, you know, an artwork has been in an extraordinary collection and that adds a huge amount of value to something and then offsets everything. But perhaps talk to us a little bit about authenticity in a market like Lowry.
Mm. Yeah, it's an interesting one that, and I'd like to add on to the previous conversation that whilst provenance is everything, and we've got to know exactly that the print's correct, it also adds a real nice sort of charm and story to a piece, particularly if you bought it directly from a gallery a year after, you know, a Hockney from the 70s, and you've got the original receipts that are handwritten. I mean, that's great. And I think that should be celebrated, because it's particularly with prints that people perhaps bought and, you know, chuck away the receipt and you don't think it's going to be the value that it is now. It's amazing to have that. So it's definitely something to look out for. And on that as well, you know, particularly Lowry pieces that, you know, a lot were published in the 60s and 70s. We now live in the age where we get receipts via our email and online. There's not necessarily, we don't have all those paper trails, but there are things that we can look at. There's the Fine Art Trade Guild stamping system that they had in place. So essentially, in terms of working out whether Larry Print is correct or not, you can have the art. You look out for the stamps, which are embossed in the lower left margin. Of course, you can check the signature against known correct works. And then we have you can have the artwork unframed. You can make sure the lettering corresponds to the guidebook that was released with the fine art trade stamp. So there are niche ways to determine provenance, but finding works with correct provenance, it's always quite nice. And I do always enjoy seeing Christie's receipts from, you know, the 60s. I find it fascinating. There's always the element of, wow, I wish I bought it back then. But they're always really nice that they tell an important part about the artwork and the story.
I'm conscious we're halfway through. We've got some great questions to cover here and some more I wanted to go through. So I'm just going to start with a couple from here. How does the number of each edition affect its price and demand? Jasper, you look like you want to take that one.
Well, it's a great question. I think I was speaking to somebody about this not too long ago. I mean, having like, say, 1 out of 100's great, and then having, you know, 100 out of 100's great. I think it's important to differentiate between artist proofs, printer's proofs, which I think perhaps Rebecca can touch on with in relation to the Warhol market. Now, the numbering, there is an argument where particularly with screen prints, where the paint was a bit fresher on the first print, and arguably it might be slightly more vibrant than later down the print run. Now, in terms of what the market and how the market reacts to that, I don't think there is a difference. We can't see that. It's great having a number, you know, a number that resonates with you. You know, I think number 5 in Asian cultures is considered lucky, but really in terms of the value of the print, it doesn't make a difference.
Can I just clarify on the question? Was it the size of the edition? So whether it's an edition of 150 or 295, is that what the gentleman was asking?
So it was a very good question to ask. I think let's answer both. I mean, the question is actually about the number itself. And obviously we do have collectors who are obsessed with particular numbers. And I always love that when they obsess with particular numbers. You know, particularly their lucky number. But it's a good question to answer, Rebecca. Size of edition versus demand.
Also, I just touching on that, you know, finding a particular number in edition, number 5, for example, in the markets that we work in is a little bit like finding a needle in a haystack. But you know, we're up for a challenge. But yes, it does have a difference. And I think to simplify it, it's if you have an edition of, let's say, 1,000, I'm thinking about the Paper Pools by David Hockney, or an edition of 50, it's the rarity of the work, and it's the ease of which, or the lack of ease of which, you could find those works. It does have a difference. It absolutely does. And
demand thing, isn't it, Rebecca? You know,
what's that, Florence?
Simple supply and demand. You know,
supply and demand, absolutely. And then, you know, touching on Jasper's point about the different types of prints and the beginnings of the edition runs, I've certainly seen in the past a lot of people putting a lot of emphasis into the first 10 or 20 of an edition run. And I think it's to Jasper's point that perhaps it would have been the vibrancy and the newness of the ink being pulled during the edition. But also, you know, we do see a lot of demand for, well, actually specifically in the Warhol market, for the TPs. That's increased in 2023 quite dramatically. And, you know, in these beautiful original prints that we're talking about, the prints and editions, you've got different types of prints outside of the main regular edition. You've got trial proofs, you've got artist proofs, you've got hors de commerce, and printer's proofs. And these were traditionally perhaps trialing out the colors, trialing out the screens. They were often in lieu of payment to the printer, for example, or the artist would keep them back or dedicate them to people. So because they have that little extra bit of history and scarcity to them, they are more sought after and often carry a slightly bigger premium.
I think what's interesting about that is because we've become so almost, you know, we see so much of Warhol's portfolio all the time. But when we see something unique that he tried, I mean, there's one at the London Art Fair at the moment, which I can actually see why it's a trial proof because the colours don't really work. So, you know, it's lovely to see that in Warhol's practice. We're so used to seeing the ones that were really, really successful over and over again. But to see those, you know, that working process behind it is really exciting. I've got another great question here. Regarding displaying, framing valuable prints, I know the best way to preserve the quality is to store it and not display it, but what's the fun in that? Couldn't agree more. We're not in this market to not look at prints all day. That said, should one consider framing hanging high quality reproduction of the print instead? And do you recommend doing that, or do you have collectors who prefer this route? I'm also curious to know if we take all the proper steps in regards to framing, so, you know, glass exposure to light. Let's talk about that because it's really important, isn't it?
It's a really, really good question.
Yeah.
I'm happy to kind of go for it a little bit. I am also in exactly the same mindset as the person that asked that question. What's the point in collecting art if you're just going to store it? That said, I'm not judging anyone that has just stored it, because we do have collectors that do that too. Maybe they don't feel comfortable, you know, keeping that artwork in their house. And I guess that brings you round to your kind of secondary nature of that question, which is, do you do a high level reproduction and hang that at home whilst keeping the artwork in storage? Yes, that is absolutely an option. And that is something that we have done for two or three collectors actually in December, in which they were looking for sort of artworks. We were able to kind of find them a high res image. They've hung, framed the high res image and actually kept the artwork in storage. That being said, if you go back to your kind of initial question about the quality of framing and having the artwork in your home, that generally tends to be, I don't want to speak for everyone else on the kind of on screen right now, but I would imagine that's probably what my colleagues would agree with me, which is, you know, having and owning the actual artwork on your wall. And so when you are coming to do that, yes, absolutely go to an expert framer who is used to doing conservation standard framing. And there are a couple of things that you really, really keenly need to look out for. The first thing is the glass. So trying to get as high as possible anti-UV. So that can be glass or plexiglass, but you basically want it to be 99% anti-UV. And the other thing is making sure it's acid-free backing or mount. So that just means that you're not going to affect any discoloration to the actual print, the quality of the print itself. And of course, you're not going to then get any fading from that direct sunlight in glass. I would never advise you hanging an artwork in direct sunlight, but indirect should be fine. But any good framer will be able to do conservation standard framing. And of course, you know, all of us will be happy to recommend someone and guide you on framing specifications and recommendations as well.
Yeah, I think it's really, really important. And I kind of perhaps romantically think that we are temporary guardians of these artworks. And it's really, really important that we take that seriously and do go the extra mile to make sure that they are framed perfectly.
And I think, in fact, somebody's just added that they've got a Hockney and a Gavin Turk. They keep them hidden away and then just adore licking at them from time to time, which is...
I love that.
I know. I think the other thing, and I'm sure you'd all be able to comment on this, is that there are particular, you know, come to us and ask us, because there are particular places that specialize in the works that, you know, you might have collected. And there are different considerations, aren't there, depending on, you know, a framer or the right particular glass needed for a work of 50 years old is different from a work that's created more recently. I mean, Jasper, Hockney, how should a Hockney be framed?
Well, I mean, I think the main thing is to make sure that you preserve the work in the best possible condition. I mean, people like ourselves go through making sure the work is given to you in the best possible way. And I think Rebecca touched on it, we almost have a responsibility to look after these works. So that's the main thing, is that they're framed by somebody who knows exactly what they're doing. And again, what Florence said, the UV protection to make sure it's not in direct sunlight, but you can frame them in loads of fun ways. You can have the edges exposed, which I think is quite fun because you can see some of the, where it's literally been torn by the publishers. I think that's always great. Or you can have a nice mount over it and sort of beef the artwork up if it's, you know, a smaller piece. So there's loads of great options. I think the main best bit of advice is getting it done by somebody who knows exactly what they're doing and has previously framed works of that standard.
Yeah. And I think, you know, when we're kind of going back to the question earlier about value and condition when you're looking at it from a buying perspective, as a buyer, you've also got to think about potentially what you're looking at from a seller's perspective. And I think, you know, if you have that artwork and you've got it in such wonderful condition, maintain that condition. That's what's going to help you keep that value long term. And I'm not saying necessarily that you are ever going to sell it, because some of our collectors, you know, actually want to keep pieces and then pass it down to their children. But you still want to pass it down to your children in the best possible condition that you can. So, yeah, I think it's really and really important that when you are doing, you know, you're looking at framing, storage, conservation, you know, making sure you keep that condition, because you've always got to kind of think, you know, a couple of steps ahead as to what either that exit might look like.
So not to just because all we talked about is keeping prints immaculate, obviously a lot of this marketplace has a lot of prints in it that aren't in immaculate condition, because, you know, I mean, in each of your markets, Florence, a lot of your prints were bought by you know, from Bristol market stalls, and people pin them up in dorm rooms and didn't realize what they had. Rebecca, you know, after parties at the factory, things were thrown in the back of cars. You know, there's stories to these prints. What can you do? First of all, is there an opportunity to buy at a slightly lower price point something that isn't in fabulous condition? And therefore, what can you do in order to, you know, is it just a done deal, or are there things that you can do to help restore a print?
If I may answer that, absolutely, you know, pricing a piece of artwork of this caliber, condition is definitely one of the variables that we look at before we come to a price. There are things that one can do, pressing a piece, you know, these are old pieces of paper, they might have a crease or an undulation, that can be pressed out without hurting the artwork at all. It can be washed. There are things that can be done. The foxing can be removed if there is some. I mean, again, remembering that's not such a terrifying word. It can be treated and prevented from creeping back in. There are steps that can be taken by conservation specialists to make sure that the integrity of the artwork is upheld and the work is preserved for years to come.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We've got to move on to budgets and investing and risk, because we promised that that's what we would focus on and not just the passion for the art. So let's talk about budgets, particularly, you know, there may be some people listening who, there certainly was a question around where to start and at what level. In each of your markets, there's obviously the best of the best. They're the pieces that, you know, you would go to if you had upward of £80,000. Where would you go if you had around £25,000 to spend in each of your markets? What's looking really good at the moment?
Who would you like to start with that one, Charlotte?
Do you have an answer immediately for me, Rebecca?
I do.
Then yes.
I would say that's such a key question. Again, it kind of reverts back to talking about all of our new types of investors who are looking at the art market. You know, in the Andy Warhol market, you can absolutely be looking at artworks from £10,000 upwards. So, you know, there's Peaches, there's Committee, there's of course the Ladies and Gentlemen, which, as I said earlier, did really well in 2023. There are some key works there. And I actually really think it's an exciting area of the Warhol market to be looking at, because it hasn't had the attention before as it deserved. These are signed Andy Warhol works. I think that they're absolutely worthy of looking at.
This is where you all get rather brilliantly competitive, because you've all got a really good
Come talk to me.
Jasper?
Well, I think what's interesting, I mean, for my market, it would probably be, I'd be looking at Hockney's works from the 60s. So that time he was experimenting an awful lot, a lot of lithographs, a lot of etchings. And I find these amazing. I mean, the attention to detail that, and you know, seeing the artworks in the flesh, and you can see where the plate's been, where it's pressed into the paper. So I would be looking at, looking at those sort of etchings that come up to the market. Not too often. They might be overlooked by some of the newer digital works that are getting that are commanding higher prices. There might be an opportunity there. But again, you guys would know this. I've got a love affair with Bridget Riley. I'd definitely be looking to come in. You could buy two Bridget Rileys that are well priced in the market. You're trying to get something with a bit of color in there. Again, from a small edition size, I think there's plenty more space for that market to grow into. And I think it's such a great market to be placed into at the moment. So, you know, I would probably buy two Bridget Rileys if I had to answer.
Of course, Jasper, you're forgetting your other true love, and that's Ellis Lowry.
Of course, of course. Going to the match is one of my favourite pieces. I just don't think 25 could stretch there. Again, you can get some beautiful Lowry pieces. You can get quite a few at those price points as well. So, a lot to play for.
Florence, thanks.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I obviously, as you said, we've probably all cornered our own little markets. But I think, you know, Banksy, for those who are familiar, has both signed and unsigned works. They're all hand numbered, but the unsigned editions are of a larger number and therefore come at a kind of slightly lower price point. So it's a great entry level point to be able to acquire a Banksy. And to be honest, we've seen some fantastic opportunities in the market at the moment. I actually think the last quarter of 2023 was really where Banksy shone, was actually in the unsigned print market at auction. So we saw some fantastic results come back. We've seen some, you know, great confidence in the unsigned prints. And if I have to sort of put my sales hat on, then, you know, I would say there's some great opportunities. So, you know, definitely let me know. But we've 25,000 is a really healthy budget. We've got quite a few pieces that would be fantastic in anyone's collection looking for an entry level Banksy.
It's quite interesting, the concept of entry level with Banksy, isn't it, Florence? Because obviously with the market swell, a lot of that unsigned work went perhaps a little above where it should have gone. And then, of course, you know, the auction houses consigned a huge amount of Banksy all at once, didn't they? And there's this correction now. So would you say it's a relatively good time to actually come back into this market or enter this market?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, we saw again, I think this was one of the reasons also why there was a market correction, was that we had a number of auction houses doing just Banksy only. And so that was just a sort of a huge supply came in. And then again, the table sort of turned, which is why we sort of the prices sort of come down a little bit. They have stabilized, which is obviously great. And exactly as you said, Charlotte, we've seen some kind of great opportunities come back. So now would be a good time to kind of, you know, start entering the market. And I know entry level sounds a little bit scary when we're talking about, you know, 20,000, but, you know, there are some pieces, you know, even that you can acquire at beneath 20,000 as well. So there's definitely opportunities there for, from even probably from sort of 15,000 upwards in the unsigned market, depending again on condition. With regards to authenticity, all the works that we have will have their pest control COA, so we kind of do that due diligence. You don't have to, but yeah, lots of great opportunities, and I think we're seeing some prices stabilize and some really healthy kind of healthy prices come in on the Banksy market. So yeah, it's looking good.
So with 10 minutes left, can't believe we've been here already for that long. Ways of buying. I want to talk about this. There was quite a few questions prior to the panel around how to buy, where to buy. Obviously, you know, we have art fairs all the time, showing a huge amount of prints and multiples. This is the first year that the London Art Fair has had its own dedicated section to prints and editions, and actually particularly those are for the primary market. What I saw on stands immediately is the amount of prints and multiples on the walls of almost every commercial gallery. Let's talk about the different ways to buy in this marketplace. And and who, you know, because, you know, there's plenty of other people in this market with a huge amount of expertise. You know, it's not just us. What are the considerations to make when you've perhaps fallen in love with a series? Let's take Bridget Riley, Jasper. You've fallen in love with those two Bridget Rileys that you are going to buy with your £25,000. And where would you start, and why might you buy in certain places and not others?
Awesome. Yeah, it's a great question. One massive thing to consider is obviously we're using the iWort, so investing. So it's also, price does come into it. So you fall in love with a piece, you've decided that is the one that you want. Now, one thing that you should consider is that you've got loads of different avenues to buy something. So you can go through sort of a gallery, you can go through auction, you can go through a broker like us or a private dealer. Now, one of the most important things to me, and particularly if you were coming in as an investor, is to have a look at the data. So the data of how this work has historically performed. Now, great if that work has been to auction in the last couple of years. You can have a pretty good idea of where you think you should be paying, where that price point should be for that work. If that work hasn't come up to auction, you can draw on comparables. But I do think when considering that, you need to have a rough idea. You know, to be in this market, anyone can be in this market, so anyone can be calling a price. So it's very important to do your background research into the artwork, know what's happening in the artwork, and be aware of auction results. Now, perhaps maybe you could buy these works from auction. Again, conditions such a big driver, particularly in the markets we work in. So being fully aware of the condition, I always think if you're buying at this level, you want to see the artwork front and back and really have an understanding of what you're buying. So there are risks buying from auction of not fully understanding the condition. They have so many lots to go through and so many consignments to work on that perhaps they don't give the due diligence to condition reporting of works that perhaps a private broker would do. But the main thing to wrap up what I'm saying is to have an idea of where an artwork sits in the market, what's happening in the market, and previous historic performance of that artwork you're interested in. It's really a data game when you're using the investing word.
And how Florence, do commission structures differ in different parts of the market?
Yeah, I think it's I think that's a really good kind of lead on from where Jasper was talking about. Because I think, yeah, there are obviously lots of these different places where you can purchase and you can also sell. But, you know, they may have different fee structures that you need to be aware of. So when you are looking, for example, at auction, you know, these can be a buyer's premium, which is a percentage added onto the hammer price of, you know, between 20 to kind of 30%. It does depend on the auction house. So it's always worth bearing in mind that you are fully aware and fully informed of the fees that you may be applicable to pay on top of that hammer price. So on top of the price at where the gavel comes down, there may be extra costs. And on top of that, there's another thing called ARR, which I think a lot of people aren't familiar with, which is stands for artist resale right. And that is a percentage that you need to pay living artists in the UK. So that will be anything from Tracy Emin, Hockney, Hearst, Riley, Banksy, you know, these are fees that you pay on top of that. So just be super, super aware when you are being quoted a price or when you are participating in auction that you are fully informed about what those fees might be from a buyer side. And then obviously from a sales side. So let's say you've got your artwork and you are looking to kind of exit. What are those kind of exit strategies looking like? Again, it's really worth noting that if you go to sell your piece, maybe at auction, you may be subject to a seller's fee or if the piece doesn't sell, that you still may be subjected to some fees as well, as well as potentially, you know, working with galleries and what their different commission structure is. So just make sure that you are fully informed and asking all of the questions so you don't get sort of, you know, caught out.
I think that's one of the sort of the key difficulties, isn't it? Because the auction house, obviously, you know, it's the public sale of the artwork. So that's what we see a lot. And yet it's very easy to get, you know, drawn into that. There's also there's also a performance fee on top of your commission fee if you buy it above a certain level. So, you know, it's just being aware of those things as you walk into the market. Rebecca, perhaps you could explain a little bit more about how it works here in comparison and why we do it like we do it.
Absolutely. So what we do here at My Art Broker is we are constantly aware of what's going on in the auction houses with the auction results. We've got our fabulous value indicator, which is really important to understand that these are not prices. These are literally they're value indicators, and they're numbers that are created by an algorithm that looks at 370 auction houses around the globe. And not just that, as you mentioned at the beginning of this talk, Charlotte, that actually when one is looking at auction results online, which everybody can do, it actually only represents about 30% of what's going on in the market. What our algorithm does, it looks at the other 70% or 60 something percent of the other things that are going on: missed bids, private sales, also valuations. I mean, there's a lot of data that gets drawn in by our algorithm, so it just gives us a really healthy indication of where that artwork is sitting at that time. So when we price artworks, we are aware of that. We're aware of the last auction results. We also do comparables. And we strive so hard to make sure that we are providing fair market value for every single piece of artwork that we're selling. We don't want to overinflate things. We want to give a really fair representation and a good return on investment to our seller and a fair market value to our buyer.
And I think, you know, that's where really, like, if you're considering buying something within the markets we specialize in, it's just always worth checking with us. We don't have the overheads of traditional auction houses and major high street galleries. And so we can just be a little bit more efficient. And if we can't, we'll tell you. That's really where the My Art Broker magic happens. I'm going to end on... just to bring it back to why people collect, you know, because we're talking about investment, but in reality, you know, we're not here to convince people to invest in art unless they're interested in art. You know, I think that happens a lot at the moment with people talking about other investments not yielding as much. Let's go and invest in art. Well, in reality, you know, you've got to have an interest in it, and you've got to have a passion for it. So a question that came in, which I really wanted to end on, is what does collecting a meaningful collection really look like? And I think you're all uniquely positioned to answer this, having worked with collectors throughout your career. What does a meaningful collection look like?
May I start on that one? As you mentioned, we've all got, you know, our different avenues that we work towards, but I think that we're all united on this fundamental key point. Buy it because you love it. Buy it because you love it. You know, there aren't many asset classes that you can invest into and watch it grow while it's sitting on your wall. It's not shut away in a box. It's not hidden away under lock and key in the wine cabinet or under a, you know, cover in the garage. It's, you get to see it every single day. It's a joy. Love it. That should be the first port of call, I think, personally. And then, of course, you know, I always think that if you love one piece of artwork and then you see another piece that you like, but you can't see a correlation, the correlation is you. You like it. It will work. And I also think that you can have, you know, secondary market works such as Riley or Hockney or Banksy alongside some traditional pieces too. You know, can really mix up your collection, be bold, be proud, enjoy what you've got on your walls. And then, of course, use my portfolio to watch your artwork hopefully growing. That's where I'd start with passion.
Love that. Florence?
Yeah, I mean, I guess just an extension. I think Rebecca said it perfectly. Buy what you love. And, you know, if you love it so much, absolutely guaranteed someone else is going to love it as well, as much as you one day. So there we go.
Justin, anything to add?
There's nothing. I think it's all been covered. But yeah, that's the number one.
And I think, you know, just to spin it back into Princeton Editions. The great thing about Princeton Editions is that if you have a budget to go and collect art, instead of trying to build a meaningful collection, which actually in reality, your life changes, doesn't it? You know, you move through, you have a family, you have a partner, your life changes, that collection has to live with you. If you can diversify that collection into 4 or 5, 10 to 20, 25 to 30 works of art by collecting prints, then you can make those decisions when it's right to make them, either, you know, either spurred on by investment potential and return potential, or spurred on by changes in your life. And that's really what creating a meaningful collection is about, isn't it? Is making it feel, resonate with you. And something might not resonate with you for the rest of your life, but if it resonates with you now, being able to buy into it and then maybe, you know, effectively almost part exchange that at some point and sell it on, is what I think is really unique to prints and multiples when we talk about meaningful collections and collections that really represent your life. I have just had some lovely, lovely, lovely thoughts coming through on the chat about some of the phrases that you guys have used. So thank you all so much. And we will, we haven't covered half as much as I wanted to cover, so I'm sure we'll be running another session soon. And do please get in contact if there are questions. There's a few questions in here about pest control waiting times, Florence, which I will let you answer via email if anybody needs any help with that. But yes, thanks guys. It's been fantastic.
Brilliant. It's been fun, really fun.
Yeah. Really fun.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye. 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 Bye.